Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Peyton, Midland is ready for what's next. Mayor's State of the City Address to be about hope, by Stuart Doreen. The state of Midland? It has been better. Midland Mayor Patrick Peyton knows this. He has often talked about the 1-2 punch Midlanders have taken this year, the coronavirus pandemic followed by an oil industry downturn. This is one of those unique years where everyone knows what the state of Midland is, Peyton told the Reporter Telegram. Economy, health care, and race relations. Midland's first-year mayor has been tested on just about every front. So as he approaches his first State of the City address on Thursday, Peyton said the topics of the day will be the future and hope. Peyton will deliver his address during the Midland Chamber of Commerce's annual meeting. There is great strength, great hope, and amazing history still ahead, Peyton said. We are only now to the point where our greatest opportunity is in front of us. Peyton said he thinks Midland is turning a corner when it comes to coronavirus and the economy. Backing up those comments are statistics that show the number of coronavirus cases inside Midland County peaked in early August at a historic low in the Permian's rig count a little more than 2 weeks ago. He said Midlanders are turning away from fear, and he couldn't be prouder of how residents handled themselves during a time of state-ordered mask mandates and business restrictions. Peyton said there will be challenges ahead for the community, including conversations about the school district and national politicians, but Midlanders are often their best when they are experiencing the worst. Peyton's message of hope will include a salute to taxing entities that responded to tough economic times by holding firm on lower tax rates, putting the community in a position to move forward when the oil industry turns another corner. We are set up for a new chapter, Peyton said. It feels like the region is ready for what's next. This article is entitled COVID Cases Down from Early August Peak, by Stuart Doreen. The number of coronavirus cases in Midland County are trending lower. That is what metrics show when it comes to the number of cases and the percentage of people testing positive. It appears the coronavirus peak took place during the week of August 2nd to 8th, when there were 414 cases, the most of any week during the pandemic. Still, there were 1,093 new COVID-19 cases in Midland County, a 26.04% decrease in August. And the month ended with 2 weeks when the number of weekly cases dropped under 200. There were 157 new cases during the last full week of the month, a 62.07% drop from the peak weekly total earlier in the month, and the lowest of any week going back to mid-June. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday the percentage of people testing positive also is dropping. Despite an increase in the number of people being tested last week, the number of confirmed cases dropped. Myers said the positivity rate for tests performed by Midland Memorial officials fell under 10%. He said previously that the positivity rate had risen to around 30% earlier in the summer. The number of deaths because of COVID-19-related issues remained flat compared to numbers in July. The City of Midland reported 27 deaths during both July and August. That is 54 of the 69 deaths, 78%, in which COVID was reported a factor during the pandemic. The most deaths during any week in August was 9, August 16th to 22nd. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled, Three More Midland County Residents Die from COVID, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland reported that another three Midland County residents have died because of coronavirus-related issues. That brings the total to 5 announced this week and 72 during the pandemic. The city reported 27 died in both July and August. All three patients had underlying health conditions, according to the city. A female in her 90s died Saturday. She was being treated at a Dallas hospital. Two others passed away this week. A man in his 80s died Monday. He was being treated at Middle Memorial Hospital. A woman in her 80s died Tuesday. She was being treated at Midland Medical Lodge. Midland ISD COVID cases increased to 54. A coronavirus case reported at De Zavala Elementary this week increased the total number of cases during the month of August to 23, and the total number of cases during the pandemic to 54. The case was reported Monday and followed the seven during the latter part of last week. The seven included two at Bonham Elementary and one at Houston Elementary, Pease Communications and Technology Academy, Carver Center, Faskin Elementary, and Lee High School. None of the cases required closure of the campuses. Midland ISD has said that each notification triggers a series of steps, which include sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or sporting event, we will issue a press release. Midland ISD cases this month: De Zavala Elementary, Houston Elementary, Bonham Elementary, Lee High School, Pease CTA, Bonham Elementary, Carver Center, Faskin Elementary, Faskin Elementary, Emerson Elementary, Pease CTA, Long Elementary, Long Elementary, Lee High Youth Center, Central Office, Bowie Elementary, Long Elementary, Alamo Junior High, Lee Freshman High, San Jacinto Junior High, Midland High, Central Office, Bunch Elementary. Last closures: Lehigh Youth Center, August 20th, opened up August 21st, Child Nutrition Services, July 29th, School Plant, July 29th. Health Department reports 27 cases. The Midland Health Department on Tuesday reported 27 new coronavirus cases. The new cases bring the total this week to 60, which is more than the 52 through 2 days last week. The Health Department also reported 1,318 total cases, a decrease of 80 compared to Monday, and 726 recoveries, an increase of 77% compared to Monday. There also were three deaths reported Tuesday. Tuesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Monday, according to the Health Department. There have been 3,299 total confirmed cases in Midland County during the pandemic. Coronavirus report: cases Monday, 33, cases Tuesday, 27, total cases this week, 60, total cases through Tuesday last week, 52, total cases, 3,299. This article is entitled, "Number of New Ector County Cases Continues to Trend Down," by J.C. Lewis. Since the beginning of August, Ector County coronavirus cases have trended downward weekly. The week of July 27th to August 2nd, the county reported 468 probable and confirmed new cases, according to the Health Department website. The weekly cases have continued to trend downward since that week. On the week of August 24th to 30th, the county reported 210 probable and confirmed cases. On Tuesday, the county reported 726 active cases, with 3,492 recovered cases. The Ector County deaths from coronavirus are at 72, with a fatality rate of 1.65%. The City of Odessa is launching a new campaign aimed at continued awareness of coronavirus in the community. The campaign will have billboards, TV and radio ads, and digital mobile ads in English and Spanish addressing the ongoing COVID-related issues impacting the community, according to a press release. The city is especially concerned about the disproportionate spread of the disease among the Hispanic community, according to the release. As of Tuesday, 80% of the confirmed cases of coronavirus in the city have occurred in individuals who are Hispanic or Latino. For the death rate, 61% are Hispanics. Medical Center Hospital reports two virus-related deaths. Two residents from the Deering Nursing and Rehabilitation died Monday at Medical Center Hospital, according to a press release from the hospital. The first patient, an 80-year-old man, was admitted on August 14th. The second patient, an 89-year-old woman, was admitted Thursday. Both patients had pre-existing conditions. This article is entitled, Midland Memorial Hospital Reduces Number of Coronavirus Beds, by Caitlin Randall. As the number of coronavirus patients requiring hospitalization steadily declines, Midland Memorial Hospital staff are reducing the number of beds in their COVID-19 units. Less than 2 months ago, the hospital had 60 beds divided between their regular and critical care COVID-19 wards, as the number of coronavirus hospitalizations soared into the 50s. Now, with hospitalizations dipping to the teens and lower, Midland Memorial has cut the number of beds in those units by half, down to 26, CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday. There's a couple of reasons for that, but the biggest one is that there's an increasing demand for those beds from non-COVID-19 patients, he said during a press briefing. We want to be sure that we care for people with all kinds of illnesses and injuries that come to us in need, especially in this time as COVID-19 begins to decline. Meyer said the hospital is easily able to reintroduce those beds if needed. There were 12 coronavirus patients in the hospital on Tuesday, 9 in the regular unit and 3 in critical care, Meyer said. Those 3 critical care patients were all in their 60s and all required ventilators, he said. 5 of the hospitalized patients were transferred from either Ashton Medical Lodge or Midland Medical Lodge, according to Myers. Midland Memorial is also seeing a decline in the number of people testing positive for coronavirus at their drive-through testing locations, Myers said. He said previously hospital staff were seeing a positivity rate between 20 and 30%, but that dropped down to 9.5% last week out of 500 tests. However, Myers cautioned residents about relaxing on virus precautions ahead of Labor Day weekend. Hospitalization spiked and reached a new high in July, about 2 weeks after the July 4th weekend. This is one of those high-risk times when people have a tendency to let down their guard, are more likely to gather in groups, less likely to respect social distancing and keep their masks on and wash their hands carefully. All the things we've been advising people to do from the very beginning, he said. So please accept this as a reminder that the COVID-19 virus isn't gone. The crisis is not over. This article is entitled, Education. Midland ISD Salaries Top Average Across Texas and Nation, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD's average teacher salary is 7.8% higher than the national average, and 22.33% higher than the state average, according to statistics provided by the district and business website business.org. The website reported that using statistics from the 2018-19 school year shows a nationwide average of $61,430 and a statewide average of $54,155. Midland ISD reported on Friday that the average was $66,250. The district based its average on the salary for a teacher with 20 years' experience. Midland's average teacher salary has been pushed up by a series of raises during the last decade, including 2 in consecutive years that lifted the starting teacher's salary from $50,000 during the 2018-19 school year to $56,500 this school year. Comparisons in the business.org report showed Midland ISD salaries increasing, while salaries across the state and nation dropped. Since 2010, teacher salaries in Texas have changed by a minus 4%. The national average for teacher salaries has fallen by 4.6% in the last 10 years, according to the report. The report also states that since 2018, teacher salaries in Texas have changed by 0.5%. Texas ranks 39th in the nation for teacher salaries. The report also shows Midland ISD's average teacher salary is higher than the average earnings of full-time year-round workers across the state. 62,720. While the average teacher's salary at MISD this year is 5.6% higher than the average salary for all other occupations in your state, the average teacher's salary across Texas is 13% lower than for all other occupations. This is the coronavirus page. This article is entitled August Continues 2020's Historical Heat by Stuart Doreen. It was another scorcher in Midland during the month of August. The National Weather Service reported that last month was the fourth warmest August on record and nearly 5 degrees warmer than the typical month of August. August continued the trend of 100-degree days that goes back to April, and the 1,300-degree days in August, and there have been 45 this spring and summer, the fourth most of any year on record in Midland. The same is true of 105-degree days. There were 2 extreme heat days during the month, and there have been 12 since May, also the fourth most in Midland's history. The NWS reports on its website that it was not only warm but dry, with 0.2 inches of rain during the month, 1.64 inches below the average for August. It was the fifth straight month that the amount of rain failed to reach 0.4 inches at Midland International Airport. The Climate Prediction Center reports that September should provide average temperatures and average rainfall in Midland. This article is entitled Employees Not Indicted in Death at Ector Jail by Caitlin Randall. An Ector County grand jury opted not to indict the employees who were involved in the death of an inmate in June at the county jail, according to a press release from the Ector County Sheriff's Office. The inmate died after being tased and restrained. Wallace Howell, a 38-year-old black man, was arrested on June 15th for allegedly evading arrest, according to an in-custody death report filed with the Texas Attorney General's Office. He was found unresponsive after being tased several times and placed in a padded cell with his arms and legs restrained, the report states. A press release from ECSO on Tuesday states the incident was investigated by the Texas Rangers. The results of the investigation were presented to a grand jury, which determined that criminal charges were not justified, according to the release. The release states ECSO employees intervened on June 15th after Howell allegedly assaulted an elderly man inside a holding cell. No further information will be released because of pending civil litigation, according to the release. Howell was the second inmate to die at the Ector County Detention Center this year. In February, a 35-year-old Hispanic man was found dead after hanging himself with his jail uniform in a booking cell, according to an in-custody death report. The inmate was found dead 30 minutes after he was arrested for allegedly violating parole and possessing a controlled substance. The Rangers are also investigating that inmate's death, according to the report. 41 inmates have died in the custody of ECSO since 1983, and 15 of those died in the last 10 years, according to custodial death records. Among those inmates, 22 were white, 11 were Hispanic, and 8 were black. African Americans account for 19.5% of in-custody deaths in Ector County, despite being 5% of the population, according to the U.S. Census Bureau demographic estimates. This article is entitled TSA Detects 2 Firearms During Screenings at Midland International, from staff reports. Officers with the Transportation Security Administration at Midland International Airport detected 2 firearms on Monday during X-ray screening of traveler and airport employee belongings at security checkpoints. The firearms were a Smith & Wesson SD-40 VE semi-automatic pistol in the carry-on bag of a male passenger and a High Point C9 semi-automatic 9mm Luger pistol in the bag of an airport employee, according to a press release from TSA. There is no evidence that the incidents are linked. Both people can face civil fines and penalties of over $4,000 for a first offense. TSA officers remain vigilant in their role of securing airline safety and work to prevent security threats from boarding an airplane, said TSA Assistant Federal Security Director Jeff McCutcheon for Midland International Airport in the release. Firearms, whether loaded or unloaded, are prohibited items and should never be brought to the security checkpoint in carry-on luggage. The TSA will review the circumstances of the incident and may levy a civil penalty against the passenger. Factors TSA considers when determining the civil penalty include whether the firearm was loaded and if the ammunition was accessible. Travelers are allowed to travel with their firearms, but they must be packed and declared in checked luggage, secured in a locked hardback case, and unloaded. So far in 2020, TSA officers at the Midland Airport have detected 12 firearms in carry-on bags, according to the release. Nationwide, TSA officers have discovered over 1,800 firearms to date, and 84% of those have been loaded. In 2019, a total of 4,432 firearms were found in carry-on luggage at airports across the country. If a gun is brought to the TSA screening checkpoint, the passenger may face a civil penalty that can exceed $4,000 for a first offense, and the fine is imposed even if you are not arrested or cited by our law enforcement partners, McCutcheon said. In order to maintain social distancing and not have to face a bag search, passengers are reminded to know precisely what is in their bags before leaving for the airport.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 2nd. District Attorney wants excessive force review. Sheriff says DA statement makes zero sense. The Ector County District Attorney's Office issued a press release on Tuesday morning stating that the use of force by officers involved in a case where a prisoner died at the Ector County Detention Center was excessive and should be reviewed and addressed by the Ector County Sheriff's Office. However, the press release also detailed the autopsy conducted by the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office showed the death of Wallace Tremaine Howell in June was accidental and due to methamphetamine toxicity. Quote, I feel like the Sheriff's Office should review the use of force, Ector County District Attorney Bobby Bland said over the phone. Quote, it appeared to be excessive. Some of it was. End quote. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths responded to the district attorney's comment on Tuesday afternoon that the excessive force statement makes zero sense as the press release detailed that the Ector County Grand Jury did not return any indictments that alleged criminal responsibility against any officers involved in the case. Quote, excessive is exactly what the Texas Rangers investigated, Griffiths said. It has been investigated, and those facts were presented to a grand jury. We know what the outcome was. End quote. An Ector County grand jury concluded its investigation on Monday into the death of Wallace Tremaine Howell while he was in custody at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Howell was arrested for evading arrest with a motor vehicle on June 15th. A previous Odessa American article detailed that Howell, quote, became combative, end quote, with another inmate in the same booking cell. Jail staff intervened, deploying a taser and pepper spray to restrain Howell. Nurses at the jail and jail staff reportedly checked on Howell at 6 a.m., and he was unresponsive in his cell. Staff began medical treatment, and Howell was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Back to school. Compass starts the year in person. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. With precautions and disinfecting regimes in place, Compass Academy Charter School has gone into its school year with in-person instruction. Superintendent Kathy Killingsworth said Compass has 1,335 students in grades kindergarten through 11 currently and will add 12th grade next year. There are 1,000 students on the waiting list. School began on August 17th. Quote, Instruction is face-to-face, with the exception of anyone in quarantine. Then we do the online learning for those that are in quarantine, Kellingsworth said. The school considered virtual learning, but decided in-person instruction would work best for them. Quote, "We've seen all of those things. We didn't think it was best for our group, plus we also think about the burden it puts on teachers to do both. We also looked at all the infection rate in students and kids, and it's very minimal. So that's why we chose to do the face-to-face. We think it's more effective," she said. Like other schools and districts, Compass went virtual in the spring. Quote, "Some kids did very well, and others didn't do a whole lot," Killingsworth said. "Things are going well so far." Quote, "We've had one student in the secondary that tested positive, and she's scheduled to be back tomorrow, September 1st, she said. "We've had a couple that were in quarantine because they were in close contact with family members. They all tested negative," end quote. As of August 31st, Killingsworth said, they had three get tested. One was negative, and two were pending. Quote, "Which is really minimal with the number of students, because there are probably 120 staff plus 1,300 students," end quote. She added that Compass has implemented a lot of disinfecting measures. Quote, "We disinfect our school daily. Our restrooms are being disinfected every hour, and water fountains have been taken out of service," Killingsworth said. "Parents do not normally come in and out as they would normally." Quote, "We're a closed campus now, even more stringently enforced, I guess is the best way to put that. We don't want any more outside exposure than we have to have, just so that we can continue to maintain sanitation," said Assistant Superintendent Jason Inman. Killingsworth said the school does not have outside vendors delivering lunches this year, nor do the parents deliver lunches. Quote, "Our students bring their own lunch. If they happen to forget it, we provide a lunch for the kids, so it prevents a lot of foot traffic," she said. "If a particular meeting is needed, parents can be screened and then enter the building." Inman, who also is the secondary principal, added that whenever possible, they have phone or Zoom conferences with parents. Quote, "If there is a need, we find a way to make it so that they can come in," Inman said. "But if we can take care of it over the phone, we would rather do that just to eliminate the in and out through the front door," end quote. Killingsworth said she, Inman, and elementary principal Amy Harvey spent the majority of the summer working on reopening plans with the Texas Education Agency and health resources. Quote, "What we think is the best plan today may change in 2 weeks, so it's kind of a fluid, moving target, but so far our students are thrilled to be back. We're participating in athletics, and a lot of things are pretty normal around here as far as kids are concerned, except they wear masks," Killingsworth added. "If students are outside doing physical activity, they don't have to wear a mask. But if they are in close proximity to another student, they must wear a mask. Teachers can wear face shields or masks." Asked if Compass foresees shutting down and doing virtual again, Killingsworth said she's hoping they won't have to do that. Quote, "We're also at the mercy of the governor. We would like to continue doing face-to-face instruction just because we think our students miss a lot otherwise. But we don't know what the winter's going to bring," Killingsworth said. "We're hoping that our procedures of disinfecting the school is actually going to help us with the flu and strep," end quote. Inman says this also should help with other illnesses that crop up when school starts. Killingsworth said Compass hopes to see higher attendance rates because of the procedures implemented, plus hand washing and sanitizing. "People who have potentially been exposed to the virus have a nurse screen them for 10 days. Quote, "It kind of depends on the situation as to how we handle that if they go into direct quarantine until the tests are back and show negative or we screen. We have a lot of different things going on. It just depends on the students, Killingsworth said. Classroom spaces have been adjusted to provide more space. She added that teachers are thrilled to be back and are glad to be teaching face-to-face and not virtual and in person. On a separate item, Compass is building an athletic and fine arts facility at the campus at 5530 Billy Hext Road. Killingsworth said completion is scheduled for March 2021. Quote, it will have an auditorium connected with the gymnasium. The gymnasium will have two practice courts, and then we'll have a lunch commons area for all the students, grade 6 through eventually 12, to have lunch, Killingsworth said. Students will be able to eat inside the commons area or on a patio with shade outside. Fine arts included in the building will be band, choir, orchestra, athletics, and PE. Phase 3 will be a two-story junior high and high school, and it's all going to be connected further east. Compass's charter is written for 1,600 students, Killingsworth said. Inman said grades are capped at 120 students each. Quote, we're crowded now, so we really do need our Phase 2 and Phase 3 to come on. We added another 8 classroom portable buildings this year. It looks just like the one we brought in last year. It's really a nice portable, so that gives us extra space. We'll be able to have all the students, K through 12, with our facilities now using all the portables next year, Killingsworth said. Killingsworth, who had been acting superintendent for a number of months, said nothing has really changed now that she is superintendent, except she's moved into the superintendent's office. Inman said Compass will be looking for a secondary principal. For now, he said, it's another hat to wear. Quote, he needs a pair of roller skates, Killingsworth said. Inman noted that the campus keeps growing and he has further to go as a result. Quote, we have a real strong staff and I think they're doing very well. It is a strain right now on everyone, whether you're going to the grocery store or the doctor or living life in general. It's all changed. Every teacher I've talked to has been thrilled to be back in the classroom and thankful that they're not having to do both, Killingsworth said. In elementary school, Compass has an asynchronous teacher to handle online learning for students in quarantine so all teachers don't have to do it. Inman says it's more difficult in secondary school because they don't have multiple teachers teaching the same subject area. Quote, but we utilize Google Classroom and we're going to be utilizing Schoology to help facilitate the online learning as much as possible. In the event that we do have a kid that has to go into quarantine or if we have to get shut down again, all those things will already be in place so that we should be able to continue as close to normal education as we can, Inman said. TEA is providing Schoology to schools that ask for it. Killingsworth said TEA is paying for it for all schools in the state. City Council District 2. Thompson touts business background. The story was written by Michael Merlo. Steve Thompson, age 71, said he is looking to run for the District 2 seat because he loves Odessa and it feels like the right thing to do. Quote, I've served 6 years on the Hospital District Board. I've been on the Chamber of Commerce Board. It's not like it's just now, he said, adding that he's been in Odessa his whole life and has served in other areas, including the Odessa Industrial Development Corporation, which is now Grow Odessa, and was also a board member on the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. Thompson said he doesn't have an opinion on what the city council does well or what they can improve on, but added that the past council in all has done a great job. Quote, I don't really have an opinion at the moment, he said during a phone interview. I've got to get in there and see what's going on and see where everything really is at. I can't tell enough from the news reports here, he said, adding that he knows the city is growing and there are a lot of infrastructure problems. Thompson, a graduate of Permian High School and Texas Tech University, said that he will bring 40 years of business experience to the city council. He retired in 2014 from his position as president and CEO of STA Benefits Limited, a company that provides consulting for life insurance, health insurance, and corporate benefits. Quote, I owned my own company for 40 years. I think that qualifies me, he said. I just come from the business world, and I know we've had good other business leaders on there. It's a little bit different since I come from a health and welfare background business-wise, so it's a little different than selling nuts and bolts. End quote. Thompson said he served on the hospital district board and helped get the hospital sales tax passed, and he hopes to serve the city with the same passion he did on the hospital board. He said he was also on the hospital district board when the hospital gave some of the sales tax back to the city. Quote, that's why Odessa Development Corporation exists today. We got that sales tax back, so I was involved in all of that. End quote. He said that it's appropriate that ODC spent money on oil and gas because it is the main economy in Odessa. Thompson said that he's not running on any particular issue, but said that he knows, quote, the infrastructure is old and needs a facelift. I know that we're laying water and sewer lines down in a hurry, and that's got to put a lot of pressure on the system, he said. Thompson said that he doesn't have any plans while running for council, and said that he doesn't think he will be any different than previous councilmen. Quote, the citizens have the same old thing. They don't want raising taxes. They don't like increased taxes, property evaluations, and all that kind of thing. Every citizen group is basically the same, and I can say I got to get in there and see where everything is at, he said. As far as what he hopes to achieve in city council, Thompson also said that is contingent on whether he is elected or not. Quote, if I'm elected, then I'll look at it, see what needs to be done, prioritize it, and go from there. That's just the way I do things. End quote. He spoke on not having an agenda and said his only agenda is Odessa and that priorities will present themselves once he's in office. Quote, I just have to go see where the current council is headed and those that are going to be left on the council. See where they want to go, and see if that fits what I think is necessary once I took a look at it. There's just stuff we don't get to see, and you don't ever get enough through the newspaper or the TV set to figure that out. End quote. Thompson spoke on not having opinions until he was elected, and said that his record speaks for itself. Quote, you can't make an opinion on something when you really don't have all the facts. Just give me the facts. I don't have any facts. So when I get facts, then I'll be able to have an opinion on what's good, what's bad, or what needs to be done. End quote. Thompson said he wants to make long-term decisions for the city and that he is not focused on just one specific issue. Quote, that's one of those things that when people vote people into office, they should be looking at the personal qualifications that they have over time and trust the fact that I can run a business for 40 years and never missed a payroll, never missed a rent track, so I've got to be able to do something. I was able to retire, so I did something right along the way, so I think I can bring that expertise to the city. That's all I'm trying to do. End quote. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 4,289. Ector County negative, 19,342 out of 23,800. 891 tested, with 260 pending, 71 deaths. Recovered, 3,492. Active cases, 726. Midland County, 3,272 confirmed cases, 69 deaths. Texas, 617,333 confirmed cases, with 5,033,554 tested. Total Texas deaths, 12,681. U.S. cases, 6,004,443 total confirmed cases, and 183,050 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TCTRJLF. Here are some quick hits. Flu shots. United Supermarkets, 2751 County Road West, is offering drive-up-and-go flu shots from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays through October 29th outside store location Flu Shot Tent. Flu immunizations are available for free with most insurance, no copayment unless required by your plan. Completing a consent form before you arrive will save you time. Wear a face covering during the immunization. Bring both your prescription and medical insurance cards. Wear clothing that provides easy access to your upper arm. For a consent form or more information, visit www.unitedsupermarkets.com/flu clinic. To reach a pharmacy team member, call 333-1591. Hurricane relief. The First United Pentecostal Church at 1700 North Texas Avenue is currently accepting hurricane relief donations from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. today through Friday. Donations may be dropped off at First United Pentecostal Church Family Center Gym at 1801 North Jackson Avenue. Items needed are tarps, one-bys, gas cans, non-perishable foods, water, toiletries, paper towels, toilet paper, sleeping bags, blankets, and cleaning supplies. To donate, text, quote, First UPC to 77977 and choose Friends Fund. All donations will go directly to the Louisiana Hurricane Relief Effort. For more information, call Brendan Pugh at area code 636-328-1472 or visit tinyurl.com/YYUMSVQ6.
ICA donates $100,000 to relief efforts from Hurricane Laura. Investment Corporation of America CEO John Bushman issued a press release Tuesday that he has contributed $100,000 to relief efforts on behalf of all ICA team members for those displaced and otherwise impacted by Hurricane Laura. The president of ICA Radio and the MCM Elegante Hotels, Barry Marks, will join local relief efforts on the ground and offer immediate financial cash assistance to those in need in the most devastated neighborhoods. The donation is being made on behalf of all ICA team members, as well as John and Carol Bushman. Spay and Neuter Clinic. Fix West Texas has scheduled a pet spay and neuter clinic by appointment September 8th through 11th at Floyd Gwynn Gymnasium, 1015 County Road West. Prepayment is required to secure appointment. No refunds. To book an appointment, visit www.fixwesttexas.org. For more information, email registration@fixwesttexas.org. ECISD reports one new COVID case. Ector County ISD Tuesday reported one new positive COVID-19 case, a student at Cameron Elementary. The total number of cases since August 5th is 47. Local news roundup. Man charged with punching, kicking, and choking woman. A 31-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly assaulted a woman to the point where she needed to go to Medical Center Hospital. John Hollett was charged with assault by strangulation, family violence, a third-degree felony. Odessa Police Department officers were dispatched August 7th to MCH about an assault victim, an OPD affidavit stated. Officers made contact with the victim, identified as Kaylee Brown, who stated that on August 6th, she was hanging out at a game room with Hollett near the area of West 14th and North County Road West. Brown reportedly told officers that Hollett was her friend, but they had an intimate relationship in the past. Brown stated she walked outside the game room to get her purse when Hollett grabbed her and threw her in the vehicle, the affidavit stated. Brown stated he got in the driver's seat of the vehicle and took off driving north on North County Road West. She reportedly detailed to officers that Hollett was striking her in the face with a closed fist and busted the inside of her upper lip open. Brown also stated after he grabbed her by the neck with his hand and applied pressure that she nearly passed out. Brown stated that Hollett stopped in the area of West 22nd Street and North County Road West, and that's when Hollett exited the vehicle, walked to the passenger side with a pocket knife, and she saw that he had cut himself on the wrist. Brown reportedly told officers that Hollett grabbed her and pulled her out of the vehicle and threw her to the ground. She stated that Hollett got on top of her and started punching her with a closed fist, and then he started kicking her in the stomach. She had scrapes on her right forearm, cuts and scrapes on her legs, and red marks around her neck, the affidavit stated. All of Brown's injuries were photographed. Hollett was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center August 28th, jail record show. He has one bond totaling $20,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday morning. Man charged with assaulting girlfriend multiple times in a month. An Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed that a 23-year-old man had assaulted his girlfriend multiple times within 30 days. Ryan King was charged with continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony. ECSO deputies were dispatched to a disturbance call at 10:15 p.m. August 28th in the 5700 block of Dennard Street in Northwest Odessa, the affidavit stated. The complainant, identified as 24-year-old Morgan Crumpley, reportedly told deputies that her boyfriend of 7 years had punched her in the face several times. Deputies saw swelling around Crumpley's left eye, and she was bleeding from her fingernails. During the ECSO investigation, it showed that King had assaulted Crumpley on July 31st. At 11:29 p.m. August 28th, King had reportedly returned to the residence in the 5700 block of Dennard. Deputies returned to the scene and found King in a black 2015 Kia. He was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center August 29th, jail records show. He had one bond totaling $10,000 and posted bail August 31st. MAF TSA officers find two firearms in carry-on bags in one day. Transportation Security Administration, TSA, officers at Midland International Air and Spaceport reportedly found two firearms during X-ray screenings at security checkpoints on Monday. The first find was a Smith & Wesson SD40 VE semi-automatic pistol in the carry-on bag of a male passenger, TSA press release detailed. The second was a High Point C9 semi-automatic 9mm Luger pistol in the bag of a non-passenger airport employee. TSA detailed in the press release that there's no evidence that the incidents were linked. Both people can face civil fines and penalties of more than $4,000 for a first offense. Throughout 2020, TSA officers at MAF have found 12 firearms in carry-on bags, the press release stated. Nationwide, TSA officers have discovered more than 1,800 firearms as of Monday, and 84% of those have been loaded. In 2019, a total of 4,432 firearms were reportedly found in carry-on luggage at airports across the country. Firearms can be transported on a commercial aircraft only if it's unloaded, packed in a locked, hard-sided case, and placed in checked baggage, the press release stated. Ammunition and firearm parts, including firearm frames, receivers, clips, and magazines, are also prohibited in carry-on baggage and must be checked. Any type of replica firearm is reportedly prohibited in carry-on baggage and must be transported in checked baggage. Only the passenger should retain the key or combination to the lock unless TSA personnel request the key to open the firearm container to ensure compliance with TSA regulations. Man charged with firing handgun at brother. A 51-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly pointed a gun and pulled the trigger on his brother, who was sitting in a recliner. Tony Allen Davis was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony, and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a third-degree felony. He's also being detained on a U.S. Marshal's hold. The reported assault happened at 9:34 p.m. August 30th in the 5700 block of Andrews Highway, an Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed. Deputies reportedly made contact with the victim, identified as 44-year-old Stephen Lynn Davis. Stephen Davis stated he was on his recliner when his brother, Tony Davis, walked up to him holding a chrome handgun and pointed it at his abdomen, pulled the trigger, and the gun trigger only clicked. Stephen Davis stated that after the gun didn't fire, that his brother pointed the gun toward his legs and pulled the trigger and fired one round, the affidavit stated. Deputies reportedly found Tony Davis on the property in front of a different residence, and he was detained and handcuffed. Tony Davis was read his Miranda rights. He stated he understood and agreed to answer some questions. During the interview with deputies, Tony Davis stated he did point the gun at his brother and then fired one shot. He then stated to the deputies where the handgun was located. Deputies obtained consent to search his truck. Tony Davis signed and consented to a search of his truck. The handgun was found and seized. Tony Davis was reportedly a convicted felon with a conviction of DWI felony January 4, 2000, out of the Andrews District Court. He was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has two bonds totaling $30,000 and was still in custody as of Tuesday afternoon, jail records show. Obituaries and death notices for Wednesday, September 2nd. Dorothy Mae Palmer Keener. Dorothy Mae Palmer Keener, 95, passed away August 29th in Odessa. Graveside services will be at 10 a.m. Thursday, September 3rd at Sunset Memorial Gardens with Reverend Jeff Clear officiating. Dorothy was born in Electra to Ivian and Creole Palmer, July 6, 1925. She married Dale Keener in 1941, and they were married 55 years until his death. Dorothy is preceded in death by her parents, her husband, Dale, brothers I.A. Palmer and C.A. Palmer, sister Helen Doris Williams. She is survived by her sons Danny B. Kenner and wife Cynthia, Glenn Keener and wife Priscilla, 6 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Jean B. Leslie. Jean B. Leslie, 90, of Odessa, passed away Saturday, August 29th. She was born April 28, 1930, in Talco, to the late Lillian R. Jones and James W. Broughton. She married J. Leslie in 1952 in Lovington, New Mexico. Jean is survived by her husband of 68 years, J. M. Leslie of Odessa, son Gregory N. Leslie of Odessa, daughter Connie G. Williams of Odessa, brother Bobby Broughton of Mount Vernon, 2 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, Wright and Lillian Broughton, and a sister, Mary Screws. The family will receive friends for visitation Thursday, September 3rd, from 4 to 8 p.m. at Frank Wilson Funeral Directors. Funeral services will be held Friday, September 4th at 10 a.m. at Frank Wilson Chapel, with Pastor Bob Bratcher officiating. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Death notices. Joe Howell. Joe Howell, 83, died Monday, August 31st in Midland. Services are pending with Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home of Midland. Wanda Lee Kinsolving. Wanda Lee Kinsolving, 87, of Midland, died Tuesday, August 25th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage of Midland. Jason Paul Locke. Jason Paul Locke, 54, of Odessa, died Thursday, August 27th. Funeral service is scheduled for Thursday at 10 a.m., September 3rd, at Frank Wilson Funeral Directors. Visitation will be held September 2nd from 5 to 8 p.m. Pastor Terry Wright is officiating. Arrangements are by Frank Wilson Funeral Directors. Dolores Garza Martinez. Dolores Garza Martinez, 78, died Sunday, August 30th in Midland. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Olga Trevino Mauricio. Olga Trevino Mauricio, 65, of Odessa, died Saturday, August 29th. A funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. Thursday, September 3rd, at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, Odessa 2 section, with Pastor Robert Garcia officiating. Edna Mitchell. Edna Mitchell, 89, of Odessa, died Monday, August 31st. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by McNett Funeral Home of Andrews. Guillermo Gui Raspal Gonzalez. Guillermo Raspal Gonzalez, 36, of Odessa, died Friday, August 28th. A funeral service was held Tuesday, September 1st at Acres West Funeral Chapel.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.